It's 4 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Violence revisits Egypt. South Africa's government probes maladministration and home security upgrade of President Jacob Zuma. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. In Egypt, some 10 people killed in separate incidents Wednesday. North of Cairo, two soldiers killed in a shootout with suspected Islamist militants. Six of the militants said to be affiliated with the Sana'a-based terror group Ansar Beit al-Maqdis were reportedly killed as well, 8 others arrested. Meanwhile, Reuters reports a 13-year-old boy and a man both died in clashes with security forces in southern Egypt during a protest in support of ousted President Mohamed Morsi. Interim President Ali Mansour, meanwhile, has ordered a judicial inquiry into the breakup of an Islamist protest camp by security forces last August that killed hundreds. Algerian troops reportedly killed 3 suspected militants Wednesday as they pressed an offensive through mountains east of Algiers. The defense ministry claims to have killed 8 suspected militants since the operation got underway March 11, including a commander of the group known as Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb. South Africa's ruling African National Congress says a report by the country's top anti-corruption official accusing President Jacob Zuma of misconduct for accepting a state-funded upgrade to his home is being looked into. Jeff Hadabe is the Minister of Justice and Constitutional Development.
The ministers of public works, of police and of defense have taken full responsibility and accountability for this project, and through the government investigation have unearthed issues of corruption and maladministration involved in this project.
A report by the public prosecutor, Tuli Madonsela, said President Zuma should repay some of the cost for the $23 million makeover of his compound in KwaZulu-Natal province. The upgrade, which the government said was done for security reasons, included the installation of a swimming pool, cattle corral, and an amphitheater. The report was released Wednesday, 6 weeks before the country heads to the polls for national elections. In Burundi, members of the suspended opposition movement for solidarity and democracy face up to life in prison following a political meeting that turned violent earlier this month. VOA's Gabe Josler reports on heightened political tensions in the country ahead of next year's planned national election.
The president of the Forum for Strengthening Civil Society in Burundi, Vital Nshimirimana, says the March 8th crackdown was politically guided.
The police, it shows that it is not neutral. It is not neutral in the sense that it is a kind of led by some thought of the ruling party.
Presidential advisor Gervais Abayehu denies there is any deliberate crackdown on the opposition. He tells VOA the protesters violated an order by the interior minister that banned political rallies on that particular day, which coincided with a public celebration of International Women's Day.
Things in this country are such that if you do not go by the law, if you do not respect what the interior minister is saying or the government is saying, it does not matter whether you are in opposition or whether you are in the ruling party, you have to face the full force of the law.
The recent violence has grabbed the attention of the international community. Some activists believe the government is intentionally stifling the opposition in order to place the ruling party in a stronger position ahead of next year's presidential and parliamentary elections. Gabe Joselow, VOA News, Nairobi.
The executive director of the World Food Program, Erthrin Cousin, visited displaced residents of Boston Goa in Central African Republic Wednesday.
I am here because while there is much going on in the world, the people who have been affected by the crisis here in Central African Republic are not only being forgotten, they are now being ignored. And we cannot allow children to go hungry, we cannot miss the planting season while the world ignores the people of CAR.
The WFP has been distributing food and seed in CAR, where the planting season is underway. Her visit included displaced residents of Boston Goa. Some of them moved into 2 areas with Christians fearing attacks by Seleka gunmen crowding into a local church and Muslims taking refuge in a school fearing anti-Balaka militia violence. Nearly 1 million people in CAR are displaced by intercommunal violence, which began a year ago when Muslim Seleka fighters seized power and launched a campaign of looting and killing in the majority Christian nation. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News. You can read more about these and other stories at our website. The address, once again, voanews.com.
Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, March 20th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. South Sudan peace talks resume today in Ethiopia, but the international community is running out of patience.
If the government or any other actor tries to undermine the peace process and rebuff the IGAD heads of state, they will face consequences. The people of South Sudan expect renewal. They expect their voices to be heard in forging a more sustainable peace.
Donald Booth is the U.S. Special Envoy to South Sudan. Human Rights Watch urges the U.S. to cut security aid to Uganda over that country's anti-gay law. Seven people were killed Wednesday in Egypt, and South Africa's government is studying a report ordering President Jacob Zuma to repay part of a $23 million home makeover.
The president will study the findings and the recommendations of the public protector in the context of the existing government interventions and will communicate his response in due course.
Mark Maharaj is the spokesman for South African President Jacob Zuma. Malawi's government is under pressure to produce documents on the sale of a presidential jet. And illegal mining poses a threat to Ghana's restricted forest areas. Those stories plus Mark Omar's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A new round of peace talks between South Sudan's government and rebels is scheduled to start today, Thursday, in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. The talks have dragged on for nearly 3 months with little progress except for an often violated ceasefire agreement. As Martha Vanderwerf reports for VOA from Addis Ababa, the international community says it is running out of patience with the progress of the peace negotiations.
South Sudan might face consequences from the international community if the involved parties do not take the peace negotiations more seriously. United States Special Envoy to South Sudan Donald Booth issued that warning Wednesday on behalf of Britain, Norway and the European Union. He said that greater efforts are needed from the fighting parties.
If the government or any other actor tries to undermine the peace process and rebuff the IGAD heads of state, they will face consequences. The people of South Sudan expect renewal. They expect their voices to be heard in forging a more sustainable peace. Business as usual is not a viable way forward.
Peace talks mediated by the East African bloc IGAD are set to continue Thursday in Addis Ababa. But South Sudan's government said this week that it would not send a delegation to the talks if pro-rebel political figures the government detained for several weeks are part of the process. The opposition side, meanwhile, has voiced concerns about the stabilization and protection force that IGAD's member states are planning to send to South Sudan next month. EU Special Envoy to the Horn of Africa, Alexander Rondos, warned sanctions could be placed on anyone who blocks progress towards peace.
The European Union, that is, reiterates that it stands ready to consider targeted restrictive measures against individuals obstructing the political process in support of the AU and IGAD efforts and in close coordination with international partners. That obviously means that our system certainly is beginning to look at more other types of measures that would be relevant for this particular situation.
Fighting between supporters and opponents of President Salva Kiir broke out in mid-December, killing thousands in battles across the country. A ceasefire was signed in January, but the violence continues. Hundreds of thousands of people remain displaced amid warnings South Sudan could face a famine unless farmers feel safe enough to return to their homes and plant their fields. Marta van der Wolf for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
South Africa's government says it is reviewing a report by the country's top anti-corruption official accusing President Jacob Zuma of misconduct for accepting a state-funded $23 million security upgrade to his home. Some political analysts say the report could undermine the dominance of the ruling African National Congress in the May 7th general election. Presidential spokesman Mark Maharash tells reporter Peter Clotty that the administration is studying the report and will continue to take steps to resolve the concerns of South Africans.
The president, from the regard to the maladministration, has been consistently concerned about alleged impropriety around the procurement in the Inkanda project. And for this reason, the president had appointed a government interministerial task team whose report has been made public and it has been presented to Parliament. In addition, last December, President Zuma directed the Special Investigating Unit to probe alleged maladministration committed during the implementation of the security upgrades at the Inkanza. And it is in this context that the Public Protector's Report will be an additional tool which will fall under the consideration of President Zuma in addressing allegations of maladministration. The President will study the findings and the recommendations of the Public Protector in the context of the existing government interventions and will communicate his response in due course.
You've heard some criticisms being leveled against the president. They are saying that that was not a judicious use of state resources and that some funds were diverted from much-needed areas. Do you think their criticisms are unjustified?
I do not want to deal with a singular criticism amongst many others. The ombuds is not a judge. The ombudsman's post is a special one in our constitution, and their findings will be put together with findings of the intergovernmental investigation. President Zuma has been addressing the concerns highlighted by the investigation, has already instructed the Special Investigating Unit to look into that and to bring to book any criminal act, and has undertaken to put those reports before the public prosecutor. So, steps are being taken. It's not as if we are not concerned. But the validity of any particular finding is something that I cannot comment on at this stage because the report was released today at 11 o'clock. It is 430 pages and the presidency needs to process that report properly in the context of the other reports that he has before him.
So South Africans will in due course know after the presidency goes through this report and comes to conclusion with some of these recommendations before coming out to let South Africans know the next steps the presidency wants to take to address these concerns?
They already know some of the steps that are taking place. One of them is the Special Investigating Unit investigating criminality with regards to those maladministration on that project. So steps are already in motion since December when the proclamation was issued. Other steps will follow, but I want to make it clear to all your listeners to understand that the report of the Public Protector, if it is acted upon unilaterally, can run foul of various other laws. For example, any finding against a person in the Defence Force cannot just be acted upon. It needs to go through the processes required by the Defence Act, need to be brought before an institute, an inquiry where they have a right to defend themselves.
Mark Maharash is South Africa's presidential spokesman. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Pretoria. Human Rights Watch says the United States should cut back security assistance to Uganda in response to that country's new anti-gay laws. Several European countries have already suspended aid over tougher criminal penalties for homosexuality, but the Obama administration says it is still considering how best to respond. VOA State Department correspondent Scott Stearns has the story.
Supporters of Uganda's new anti-gay law, which can lead to life in prison for homosexual activity, say Washington should stay out of the country's affairs. Pastor Martin Sempa.
Somebody go tell Barack. Africa says no. Africa says no to sodomy. We only know one way to love. A man marrying a woman.
With some in the LGBT community leaving Uganda in fear, the new law has far broader consequences for the country, says Human Rights Watch's Sarah Margon.
We see the space for independent actors, activists, and civil society closing very quickly.
The World Bank moved quickly to postpone a $90 million loan to Uganda, but the Obama administration says it's still considering how it might respond so as not to hurt the Ugandan people. State Department spokeswoman Jen Psaki.
A lot of the aid that we provide goes to ensure services for things like life-saving health and medication for HIV/AIDS, to bring justice to those responsible for atrocities like the LRA. So we want to make sure that actions we take don't have a detrimental impact on the Ugandan people who need those health services.
Margon says it's time the U.S. linked human rights with Ugandan security assistance.
There's been a lot of condemnatory statements, and the time has kind of passed for that. The U.S. needs to actually take some concrete actions. One of the things we've been talking about is looking at U.S. assistance to the police and the security forces, given that they are going to be the ones tasked with implementing the law.
Uganda remains defiant in the face of Western pressure over the anti-gay law. Government spokesman Afuano Opondo.
It is an attempted blackmail which the Western world has employed on Africans for the last two centuries, and I think Uganda is leading the way to stand up to this blackmail.
President Yoweri Museveni says he'll not be lectured on an issue that he says was provoked by Western groups who come to Ugandan schools and try to recruit children into homosexuality. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry says President Museveni has agreed to meet with U.S. officials on the issue.
He committed to meet with some of our experts so that we could engage him in a dialogue as to why what he did could not be based on any kind of science or fact, which is what he was alleging. And he welcomed that.
Kerry says Washington is taking an individual approach to the more than 80 countries that discriminate against the LGBT community, instructing U.S. diplomats to become, in his words, an advocate of facts on gay rights. Scott Stearns, VOA News at the State Department.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, March 20th, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is now coming up at 16 minutes past the hour. Unrest in Egypt has resulted in at least 7 deaths as security forces Wednesday raided a militant hideout near Cairo and police fired tear gas at Islamist demonstrators in the capital. Edward Urania reports for VOA from Cairo.
Egypt's interior ministry says 2 officers were killed along with 5 militants when Egyptian police, military, and special forces clashed with Islamist militants during a raid on a reported safe house of the Sinai-based group Ansar Beit al-Maqdis just north of Cairo. The militants opened fire on security forces and set off the car bombs, sparking a gun battle that lasted several hours, the ministry said. The group has stepped up attacks on Egyptian security forces since the military ousted Islamist President Mohamed Morsi last year. Last week, militants ambushed a military police checkpoint in Kalyupia, killing a number of young policemen. Also Wednesday, an Egyptian court sentenced more than 2 dozen Islamists, many in absentia, to death over violent attacks in the port city of Suez. One man was also given a 15-year sentence. Elsewhere in the Egyptian capital, police fired volleys of tear gas at clusters of young men around Cairo University after a protest by Muslim Brotherhood students spilled into the main boulevard facing the campus. The protesters pelted police with stones and bottles in streets near the university. Police prevented protesters at Al-Azhar University on the opposite side of Cairo from going off campus, although young men threw stones at passing vehicles and police. Egyptian media also reported scattered clashes in Nasrout and several other towns across the country. The Muslim Brotherhood website accused police of assaulting students at Al-Azhar University and claimed the protests marked a new revolution. But the protests were fairly small compared to many in the 3 years since a popular uprising toppled longtime President Hosni Mubarak in February 2011. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Malawi President Joyce Banda's government is under pressure to reveal documents related to proceeds from the sale of a presidential jet to the British Virgin Islands company Bonax Enterprises. The $50 million was supposed to be used to buy maize and medicines for the country. However, there are concerns the money is either missing or has been used to offset a military arms debt. Lamek Masina reports for VOA from Blantyre.
Malawians started to ask about the money after a local newspaper recently published a story on the issue. The story quoted sources in the Treasury as saying they could not trace how the funds were used because they were not deposited into the government's consolidated account, known as account number 1. Several government authorities say the money was used for its intended purpose. President Joyce Banda maintained her earlier stance during a recent press conference in the capital, Lilongwe. She says although she was the one who instructed the sale of the jet, but she did not do it alone. She says she presented the issue before the cabinet meeting where it was agreed that they should use the money for buying maize. She says they also agreed to buy military equipment for the peacekeeping mission in the DRC, buying medicine and contributing to the farm input subsidy program. When pressed on the matter, Finance Minister Maxwell Nkwezalamba said the money did not really go into the treasury, but was used to offset a military arms debt, which the government owed to the private defense firm Paramount Group, whose subsidiary is Bonox.
Instead of them giving us the $50 million for the presidential jet, we requested Bonox, given their association with Paramount, to basically pay Paramount that amount. So that money never came.
Information Minister Browning Pinganjira previously told reporters that the money was used to buy maize and military equipment, and that some of it was used to finance the farm input subsidy program. The contradictions have raised suspicion among members of the general public, including the NGOs and opposition politicians, who think the money may have been embezzled. Legal experts have also argued that by battling, the government contravened Section 172 of the Malawi Constitution, which does not allow expenditures of government revenue before it is deposited in the consolidated account. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta.
Illegal mining is posing severe challenges to mining communities in Ghana. As Joanna Mete reports from Accra, the unlawful practice is gradually shifting to restricted forest areas with dire consequences to the environment.
Illegal mining is a major source of income for people living in mining areas. They work by digging pits close to the mining enclaves of big companies. But now, a new trend is evolving and people are beginning to exploit land for mineral wealth in protected forest areas. Kujo Ewudi is corporate planning manager at Ghana's Forestry Commission. He said those who engage in such acts are flouting the laws of the country.
Some people sneak into the forest. Sometimes we cannot identify them. We have challenges of logistics and personnel.
There are more than 270 such forest reserves in Ghana. They serve as sources of lumber as well as protection for some river bodies. However, inappropriate practices by the illegal miners are causing the loss of timber resources. Ewudi said land degradation and cyanide spillage is also polluting affected soil and water bodies.
It affects those downstream of the river. For example, if Denso River is Atewa Forest Reserve, it supplies water to about 65% of Accra population. So if we don't take care, then Accra will not get water. So we are trying to flush out the illegal mining. Otherwise, cost of treatment and water will go up.
Ewudi said, although gold prices have fallen on the world market, it still attracts local and foreign interests.
Majority are Ghanaians, but the Chinese have joined them, give them better technology. Then people are from Mali, for Burkina. There is a case in the northern part of the country where people from Cote d'Ivoire and Mali enter a reserve called Bouy National Park, where the dam is. We just flush them up.
The government of Ghana is working with community groups and law enforcement agencies to deal with the problem. However, a community-based human rights group, WACAM, said more drastic measures should be adopted in dealing with the challenge. It said a mining law that allows 2% concessionary rights in restricted forests to multinational companies must be reviewed. Hannah Owusu-Krantin is a director at WACAM.
Protected forests is not a product that you can choose and pick from. It's whole. So once you start destroying elements, no matter how small that destruction is, you destroy the integrity of the forest.
Owusu-Krantin said new provisions must prevent companies from externalizing their social, cultural, and environmental costs to society. Penalties for violating the law must also be tightened to help prevent cyanide spillage. Joanna Manti for VOA News, Accra.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports news, we begin with handball. Defending champions Egypt dismissed Tunisia 26-19 as Algeria edged Angola 24-22 in semifinal action at the Africa Boys Youth Handball Championships in Nairobi, Kenya on Wednesday. Libya beat Kenya 23-16 to claim fifth place, as Niger overwhelmed Zambia 41-8 to place seventh overall. Algeria challenge Egypt in the finals, while Tunisia face Angola in the bronze medal playoff. Turning to football, Ghana's goalkeeper Azume Adams was named player of the match after Ghana beat Germany 1-0 in their FIFA Women's Under-17 World Cup tie in Liberia, Costa Rica on Tuesday. Ghana also beat the European champions to clinch the bronze medal at the last edition of the tournament 2 years ago. Earlier this week, Ghanaian striker Sandra Owusu-Ansah was also named player of the match when Ghana beat North Korea 2-0. In their Group D opener, Nigerian striker Rashidat Ajibade was named player of the match when Nigeria pipped China 2-1 in Alajuela. Meanwhile, Ghana Football Association Executive Committee member Randy Abe urged Ghanaian fans and the local media to lay to rest the debate around the budget for the Ghana Black Stars campaign at the FIFA World Cup in Brazil, now that the Ghana government has settled for a reduced budget of $9.8 million. Abe told the Accra media on Wednesday that the raging debate in the local media can only divert the attention of the Black Stars, who ought to concentrate on preparing for their third consecutive World Cup appearance in June. In volleyball news, Tunisian defending champions CS Sfaxien begin their title defense at the Africa Men's Club Volleyball Championships in Sousse, Tunisia today, Thursday. The 10-day event features 21 teams from Algeria, Cameroon, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Egypt, Ethiopia, Kenya, Libya, Morocco, Mozambique, Seychelles, Sudan, Uganda, and Tunisia. Finally, in cycling, Eritrean Emmanuel Egerzeig Zaeri won the Tour of Blida, some 50 kilometers south of the Algerian capital Algiers, on Wednesday. The Tour of Setif, some 300 kilometers east of Algiers, enters its second day today, Thursday. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a great day. Here's our listener mail for this Thursday morning, March 20th.
I wish to thank the Ugandan government for saying no to gay marriage, and I thank the country for the aid given to them from the international country like Denmark, Netherlands. Ugandans should say bullshit to such aid. Ugandans, maintain your culture and your peace. God of sufficiency will come to the aid of Ugandans. Money or financial aid international is not everything. Your culture is paramount important. Comrade Mazi Patrick Okurukra for Owoblu premises today, Angrujo, Nigeria.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us in the United States at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us a message. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. South Africa's top anti-corruption official has accused President Jacob Zuma of misconduct for accepting a state-funded $23 million upgrade to his home. The report from Public Protector Thuli Madonsela says the president should repay some of the cost for the makeover of his compound in KwaZulu-Natal province. The upgrade, which the government said was done for security reasons, included the installation of a swimming pool, cattle corral, and an amphitheater. That's it for this Thursday, March 20th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckfer, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Strarak, as well as post editor Mark Oldman, along with our engineer Jimmy Cook, I am James Butte in Washington saying, have a lovely day, Africa.
What's going on? What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Vunganyi right here in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We love to have you on board. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. Hot, hot.
Upfront is a show that explores issues
that affect your daily lives. Don't move that dial. Get your snacks, get your cup of tea or your cup of coffee. Put your feet up. This is Upfront. cheers. Clink, clink.
Yeah. Now there is a youth culture that is being practiced by the youth globally. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I feel like the problem is that once the funds are sent
to these developing countries, it sometimes gets in the wrong hands, and then it's the actual people that are supposed to be benefiting from these funds really never even get to see.
What does this mean for your local culture? Is it being threatened? Should your parents be worried? Let's talk. This is Upfront of the Voice of America. You can follow me on Twitter. My handle is at Upfront Africa. And remember, you can always send us an email here on the show. It's upfront@voanews.com.